Word Jam.
One of many lives on the S-curved river. Where the S-curved river swings through a valley of tulip farms, you might raise your small digital camera to capture an inadequate image of colorful fields in bloom. Or you may choose to relax into the moment, your eyes ingesting colors as you enjoy the sun's warmth on your forehead and arms. Sitting on a bench on the upper deck of this tourist's excursion down Royal River, you can't help feeling both special and common all at once. Special, because you are privileged to remove yourself from your working life for the sole purpose of traveling downriver past tulip fields. And common, because you're surrounded by funny-looking tourists in shorts and sun hats. The scene is gorgeous on a perfect day when a squawking loudspeaker amplifies the captain's announcement that we will dock in a moment for those who wish a photo op at the tulip farm or want to purchase a bunch of yellow, purple, and white tulips, the specialty of this colorful region. Dorothy, my 21-year-old daughter, asks if we should buy a bouquet for her mother, my wife Lena, and I offer a non-committal, somewhat positive answer. That's a lovely idea. Let's see what we think when we get there. I don't love flowers, and I don't care for the way excursions milk tourists for dollars, and I know that Lena is fond of blooming flowers and that our daughter Dorothy enjoys giving them to her mother. So I suspect I will have to open my wallet to pay too much for a bouquet of bright tulips. As we step from the boat's plank to a dock at the edge of the tulip farm, I realize there is something peculiar and wrong here. I hear water sloshing the dock as I arch my neck back to look up at a massive cumulus cloud throwing a cold black shadow across the tulip fields, an immense cloud rolling our way, spreading its dark shadow between sun and expanses of flowers. And as charcoal-textured shadow spreads, swallowing the light and everything in its path, I want to laugh, but am full of inexplicable sorrow and understand none of this is real. Not the river, not the flowers, not my daughter, not my wife, not the dark devouring cloud. No, none of this is real. Not even the one who realizes this is not real.
Thank you. I'm good. I'm coming in right now. Need a lever.
I think I know. 30 years ago, Harvard. They're throwing it in the newspaper now. Like, oh my God, they think it's all about hallucinogens. Damn straight, they're talking about it. And your master to teach you. And that's where we come from. Monkeys with the crazy ones.
Once there was a hedgehog that realized she was a hedgehog and nothing else than a hedgehog. She did so coincidentally while a small East German Trabant farted its way down a well-cleaned street in the Weisensee section of quiet East Berlin. The first thought she recalled having was, that one needs some work. In doing this, she had somehow formed both a language and a means of separateness from her surroundings and inadvertently the other hedgehogs that were around her. It was, in addition to the car, her recognition of the other hedgehogs that she thought made her realize that she was a hedgehog, but quite unlike the others. She found it ironic to define herself as both different and similar to the others snuffling about. She also found irony itself, in this case, fairly ironic. There was absolutely nobody to share her revelation with. Her life had been neither an idyllic or a difficult one. With a burrow in a row of hedges along a green in front of a block of flats. She was 5 years old at the time, but the day she became fully self-aware seemed as if it was a sort of birth. Her former life, while remembered, seemed as if it was a short amount of time and not fully her own. In comparison, the 2 days that had passed since her awakening were positively massive in their scope and quality. What is more, she had not slept because she had lost some of the basic instincts of being a hedgehog, namely, a profound preoccupation with gathering insects, a shy but sly sense of self-preservation, and being nocturnal. It wasn't that she wasn't exhausted and hungry. She was. It was just that she was so busy thinking about herself and her difference that she couldn't muster the tireless routine of hedgehogging. After the third day, for the first time, she began to wonder if she was a hedgehog at all anymore, or what, for that matter, she could be if she wasn't. She also became quite obsessed with the natural, or rather unnatural, boundaries that defined her green. She couldn't justify how she hadn't noticed them before. They included 2 flat facades of apartments with minimal steps and gardens, a row of parked cars, a bike path, and most notably, a large series of underground wires that were invisible and inaudible to those that were above ground. What was even more astounding is that these wires seemed to have been carrying a vast series of forces, and within them, words. She could not make out what was being said, but she could determine multiple conversations at once. Unbeknownst to her, another hedgehog had become self-aware at the exact same time on the green. But the fact of the matter was, and is, that there is self-awareness, and then there is self-awareness. This little fellow was both very nervous and not particularly bright. While she had begun to question her very nature, and in turn her purpose, he had spent most of the time thinking about the differences between all the insects he had been eating, and what he might say if he was to go and try to speak to her. It did occur to him that she too was different, but it did not occur to him that she might be in crisis or that she was contemplating her own demise, which in fact she was. With each passing thought, she became more and more insightful, and concordantly, her thought slowed down like a dozer dropping into low gear. The female hedgehog had just about enough of all this and knew intuitively that if she were to bite into the wires, she would ultimately change her circumstance. What she was unaware of is that inadvertently, she would change others as well. The 3 previous days that marked her awareness had a sort of parallel only blocks away at one of the checkpoints at the Berlin Wall. This particular checkpoint was a bridge called Bosa Brücke, named after its constructor, a Mr. Bosa, which translates directly into English into Mr. Evil. People had begun to amass on both sides asking questions about rumors of a potential pass system, where East Germans could attain day passes to go to West Berlin. As the crowd began to become huge over the 3 days, the guard on duty knew he was to make a choice between using lethal force or opening the gate. He called his superiors, which in turn called theirs, until Egon Krenz, the newly appointed leader, was reached. Krenz, knowing of the immediacy of the situation, called Gorbachev. As the Soviet Secretary General picked up the phone, the line unexpectedly went dead, but not before he heard a pained snuffle, followed by a shriek of what sounded like a small animal. When the male hedgehog heard the shriek, he knew it was her. As he followed the old tunnels, he found an offshoot headed towards the wires and a small burnt mass that could only be her. Distraught, he made his way above ground and blindly followed the greens above ground in his despair. He was forced at times to cross some pavement, but he managed as soon as he could to get back to a strip of green. Soon, he noticed many people near a bridge and with great trepidation decided to cross it with them, despite the feeling of pavement on his claws and all the people. They were obviously trying to get out, and he thought it was smart to do the same. Whatever could have killed the female had great power and might still be lurking about. Then, an odd thing happened. The blind brutes that were all around seemed to finally notice him and gave him plenty of room. Oddly, the crowd went quiet as he wandered across the little bridge and through the gate. As soon as he had crossed, the crowd cheered and he was hoisted into the air. He was juggled, thrown, and most notably, kissed. Soon he found himself being tucked into a pocket and the warmth put him into a deep and sound sleep. When he awoke, he found himself in a strange clear box. Around that, another box with a window to the outside world of trees and green. The time to come was interminable. A young girl would come and feed him, and from time to time, take him out and roll him around a little bit. She spoke a strange language that was not grunty or snuffly like the ones he knew or previously heard. Chesh kohanka, sadabish chishai. He enjoyed her for the most part, but only was able to spend a few moments a day with her. As the weeks and months passed, the routine was to continue with only one notable change. The walls of his outer box began to be covered in colors in the form of posters, orange, blue, and yellow. At first he found them compelling and interesting, but then he slowly noticed that they had an odd effect on him. They made him dizzy and nauseous. As the posters and bedspreads increased, the hedgehog found it more and more difficult to eat and sleep. What was once a pleasant and delicate sensitivity became a sort of imposed vertigo. While a subtle juxtaposition of taupe and ochre might still be curious, large fields of saturated turquoise and magenta would put the hedgehog straight into a dizzied sleep regardless of when he woke up. Hedgehogs apparently all have this sensitivity, yet it is generally left unrealized due to their incapacity to be aware of difference and a predilection for nighttime snuffling about when colors are minimized. Henri Matisse said that color was a function of amount and comparison. The hedgehog might wonder what else there might be. One day, the young girl, who had been slowly papering her room with posters and covering the floor with colorful animals that did not move, walked into her room with a series of boxes and proceeded to pack up everything. While her language was still indiscernible to him, her father's had become clearer over time. While hedgehogs have no real capacity for language, they generally get the gist of things. Apparently, they'd be moving. The girl and her father packed for days until all that was left was a box in a white room. The hedgehog was thrilled and managed his first real appetite in months, but the stark beauty was not to last. Finally, he too was plopped in a brown box and taken to a vehicle he couldn't really see. The father was cursing when he finally sat in the car due to a fall he must have taken outside, Apparently, the driveway was a bit icy. The hedgehog sensed he was moving, although he couldn't see anything. The car seemed to be moving along for quite some time when the lid was opened and the girl peered in on him. While she groped for him, the hedgehog could hear the father yelling at her to sit down. "Shadai, Beata! Shadai!" Soon, the hedgehog felt himself being jostled against the inside of the box, and a second later, he, the box, and the whole vehicle seemed to be spinning, then tumbling. There was a long, silent moment where the hedgehog seemed to separate from the rest of the noises. At a distance, he heard the whole thing coming to a dull, crunching stop. When the hedgehog came out of his tightly knit ball and opened his eyes, he did not see a car or a box at all. He was on the side of a road with a lot of clothes and a number of the stuffed animals he recognized from the girl's room. When none of the stuffed animals moved, he recognized that he could, and he began to head across a field. As he glanced back, he could see red lights flashing, and they were dizzying. Apparently, the hedgehog was not so far from the family's destination. It was the Polish city of Wrocław that was once the German city of Breslau, and had multiple prior incarnations as well. Intuitively, he skirted the busiest streets and found himself on a pedestrian walkway, mostly alone. He was very cold and feeling quite weary. Hedgehogs do not need to hibernate and only do so as a means of conserving fat stores through the winter when food is unavailable. But the colors of the girl's room prevented him from putting much weight on that year, and he was feeling its effects. As he scurried down the street, the ground began to glow with color. It was January, and the ice in the streets was slick and shiny. His claws seemed well adapted to the surface, but the color was inescapable. Shop windows glowed neon hues down onto the sidewalk. Finally, the little fellow just closed his eyes and kept walking, until he careened into the side of a rough stone church. When he opened his eyes, a great expanse of purple radiated down and back up at him from the ice. There was no escaping it. A mall had been built not 10 feet from a church, and its anodized violet facade penetrated his very being. He didn't even have time to shriek. A young girl left the mall and headed into the plaza, with her parka hood fully zipped into a tube. The young girl was surprised to see a small animal. It seems its hands were raised up in front of its eyes. The girl's small cone of vision framed the little fellow so nicely she wasn't repulsed. Round image framed in fur, white snowy square, beige teardrop hedgehog. She bent down unafraid to see if he still may be alive. While already quite dead, the hedgehog recoiled into a more natural fetal position at her touch. With that, the girl quite surprisingly found herself crying, and, with a quick scoop, she found herself carrying it toward the Odra River. The hood also afforded her some protection from the stares and looks she was getting as she performed her portable pieta. Not finding a suitable place for burial, she continued across a small bridge to Ostrów Tumski, a small island in the Odra, which contained the oldest buildings in the city and its primary cathedral. She bent over and carved a small grave in the snow, and as she laid the animal in, she noticed a pair of old black shoes relatively close to where she was digging. A man's voice said something admonishing, and she stood up to see a priest quite concerned. As they began to discuss the efficacy of the burial, the two became quite engaged. After a short time, the priest became terse and demanded she move the animal to another location. Resolved, she crossed her arms and let her eyes drift to the ground. There, not 5 feet away, lay a teardrop shape melted in the snow, where there was only green grass and not a hedgehog to be found.
Hedgehog by Tony DiTello. This is the first time we've had Tony on our show, and, well, it's been a long time since we've done a word jam. I have to admit, after doing 34 episodes, I kind of burned out. But then I ran across Tony, and he wanted to record this story. And listening to this story, it was kind of enlightening and saying, yeah, that's what it's all about. So I don't think it's going to be so long between episodes now. Kind of regrouped, and who knows where it's going to go. Before Tony's story, we had like a musical interlude there, which I called, what did I call it? A Day in a Lifeboat, which is written by Kenny Smith. And it's actually a tribute to Steve Reich. Kind of a math formula thing. He did these heavy math things, and, well, my math isn't quite so heavy, but anyway. Actually, it was Steve Barsotti who turned me on to Steve Reich. And what makes that relevant is the fact that Steve Barsotti has got one of his great acoustic pieces underneath Tony's story here. And we started off Word Jam with one of my very favorite people, Stephen J. Weidenberg, reading his short story, One of Many Lives on the S-Curved River.
Number 35.